Welcome to Big Mike's Movie Podcast, the audio companion, as it were, to Big Mike's Movie Blog, which can be found at bigmikesmovieblog.com. I'm your host, Mike Mendez, for this episode, and with me, my guest, my good friend, Graham Greenlee. How you doing today, man?
I'm awesome, man. It's a nice day.
It is a nice day.
Good day for a podcast.
It is a good day for a podcast. Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful day in Southern California after like almost three weeks of pure storms. And we're sitting inside talking to a computer.
It's, we should be sitting outside, especially considering that, pretty much every other place in the world is freezing at this point.
That is true.
But I'm gonna enjoy the weather by staying inside and doing this amazing podcast with you.
Well, we're in your apartment in Studio City, and I look outside and I can see that it's nice, so that's enough of an enjoyment for me. It's kind of hot.
It puts me in a good mood to talk Oscars with you. Definitely.
There you go. And furthermore, we're in Studio City. We're in the heart of it, as it were. It's a few minutes away from Universal.
In fact, you can see Universal outside our window. So outside,
Far from Burbank or Hollywood.
Right.
Where you work. You work downtown in Hollywood.
I work actually on Hollywood Boulevard. Not working on the Boulevard.
I would hope not.
But I work for a production company that's on Hollywood Boulevard. And we're in the shadow of everything. I mean, I have to walk by the Kodak Theater every day to get to work. So, the Oscars definitely are looming large, especially this last few weeks since the nominations have been announced. There's a lot of regular tourists anyway, but, everyone that I walk by and everyone in the office definitely is talking about the Oscars constantly, what's going to win, what they like the best, what got snubbed. And so, there's definitely Oscar fever in the air. I don't know if that's going on around the country, around the world. I have to assume to a certain extent. But definitely in my small Hollywood world, this is everything that they're talking about.
To a certain extent, and certainly to anybody who's probably listening to this, it's the time of the year for movie fans. It's the time to catch up on the movies that you haven't seen or start making your list of all the movies of the year. Now, real quick, I think of most of the big movies that have been nominated, between you and I, we've seen most of them. We haven't seen Crazy Heart, have we?
I still have not seen Crazy Heart.
I haven't seen it either. And what about The Messenger? Did you see that one?
I haven't had a chance to catch The Messenger yet. But I am looking at the Best Picture nominees. And actually, this morning I watched the last one that I hadn't seen, which was A Serious Man. So now I've seen all 10.
You've seen all 10
Best Picture nominees, which is always a goal, is to catch up immediately when the nominations come out to at least see all.
Now, I brought you on as a guest not just because you're my best friend, but because you have almost an encyclopedic knowledge of Oscar history.
I do all right.
You do all right?
I do. Well, I'm being modest, but yes, I do all right.
What was the Best Picture in 1957?
1957 was,
first question, I'm gonna embarrass you on this podcast.
We
can edit this out later. That's the beauty of the podcast.
But you're not gonna edit this out later.
I will edit this
out. I'm gonna say River Kwai.
Mm-hmm. Who won for Best Actress in 1984?
That would be Sally Field for Places in the Heart.
Okay. Who won Best Director in 1993?
That'd be Steven Spielberg for Schindler's List.
There you go. See?
Yeah.
Right? Schindler's List. It's hilarious. Now, how good have you been with your Oscar predictions in the past? Because up until Slumdog Millionaire, which threw me off track, I had been about 3 years in a row I'd called the Best Picture. My favorite movie of the year just ended up being Best Picture, and Slumdog threw that all away. So many, I don't know. What do they call them? DeBry or they have some weird, what's the weird name for their money? Rupees or?
I think it's rupees, unless I'm remembering the Temple of Doom as being current India.
I think maybe I'm thinking of Legend of Zelda.
Okay.
That might be incorrect. But I know we do our Oscar picks every year, and that is basically what we're here to do. What we're here to do today is to help everybody listening win their Oscar pool. Now, if you haven't already got your ballot, you can go ahead and download it. There's plenty of places on the internet to find it. And I will put up a link as well on my page with this podcast to the one that we're using, the official Oscar ballot. I read a lot of the different things. I know I read the envelope, and this is the LA Times section. What are some of the sites that you check out that kind of keep you up to speed on the race and, you know, the other award ceremonies that are going on? Because every other award ceremony is just a build-up to the Oscars, basically, and helping people handicap their own choices.
Oh, right. Well, aside from The Envelope, which is a good place to start, Tom O'Neill runs a really good site there. There's two sites in particular that I go to. One is Awards Daily, which is run by a woman named Sasha Stone, and she's been running her website for over 10 years at this point. She's got a really good idea of how the Academy thinks, how everything works in context to Academy history. She'll tell you right now, if Hurt Locker wins Best Picture, what does that mean for the overall Oscar, you know, legacy or any other film? She's got a great blog there. She has a lot of contributors that add to her site and links to, you know, various media sites that have interesting articles or videos. So she's a good place to start. Another good blog that I like to go to is Nathaniel Rogers' film experience .blogspot.com, which is, you know, has a very specific take on the awards and on film in general, but I kind of like his take. I don't always agree with what he says. You know, his tastes tend to gear towards, you know, stronger female performances, or there's more perhaps gay interest on this site. But I mean, that's also, without alienating part of the audience, that's a big part of the Oscar experience. I mean, a lot of people say the Oscars are like the Super Bowl for women or for gay men. I mean, and that's kind of where the Oscars lie. But both of those sites have some great voices and really kind of help clear the air and clear the picture for what you're looking at in terms of this year's awards and next year's awards. So those are the sites that I generally check out.
The thing too is that we read all these sites, and people like you and I and some of the people that are listening to this who are really into it, you know, and really is, you know, something that they follow very closely. It's all about handicapping it. And like I said, the other awards lead up to this, and you look at some of these different awards and you think, whoever wins the DGA award is probably going to win Best Director. And whoever wins SAG is probably, you know, a lock to win. But we both know as well that nothing is ever guaranteed.
Right.
Especially when it comes down to the Oscars. There's always a surprise when usually in an acting category.
Right. I mean, a lot of these sites generally throw out statistics like 63% of films that win the SAG Ensemble win Best Picture, right, or various math. But I mean, in the end, you know, rules are made to be broken, and rules are constantly broken in the Oscars. I mean, someone will say, you know, it's been, you know, 14 or 15 years since a film's won Best Picture at the Oscars without winning Directors Guild, Writers Guild, or SAG. But I mean, that could happen this year with Avatar. And if that does happen, then that sets a new statistic for next year where, well, this almost never happens, but it happened last year. And so people try to guess off of what other awards are doing, and certainly they tend to set the stage and set the conversation, but really it comes down to the films themselves and the campaigns that they run. And, you know, overall, does the Academy like this movie? You know, people aren't going to vote for a movie they don't like. A lot of people will complain when a film like, you know, Crash or Shakespeare in Love wins Best Picture, when a lot of opinion is that another film is superior or better or a better Best Picture. But in the end, you know, the Academy didn't vote for Crash because they didn't like another movie. And the Academy didn't vote for Shakespeare in Love because they didn't like another movie. They voted for those movies because they connected with them, or there was something about them that they really liked. So you can't have an Oscar voter, you know, vote for a movie that they didn't like. So commonly you'll see that come up in the race where, you know, it's a mixture of Academy sentiment, a little bit of history, a little bit of guilds, but mainly at this point when the ballots come out, which the ballots have just been shipped out this week, what's the last movie that they saw, and what have they liked through most of the season when they were watching movies?
What did they watch at home, and what did they see in the theater? Exactly. What did they get on a screener, and what did they go to, like, a, you know, red carpet gala premiere?
Exactly.
So basically, what we're saying is that we're adding a disclaimer and saying that while we're not experts, you know, while we're well-versed, nothing is guaranteed. Right. But we're going to try to help you pick your Oscar winners as best we can. Maybe help you win a little cash if a little money goes under the table at your place of business or at your home, at your Oscar party. hey, you know what? That's all the more for you. We're going to try to help you out as best we can. Going off of what we've seen this year and off of what we know of the Oscars in the past. So the first two categories we're going to talk about are kind of big ones that don't really get recognized unless it's like a writer-director or something, but those are screenplays. The first one is Best Original Screenplay, and the nominees this year are The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, The Messenger, and A Serious Man, and Up. I think right now, Tarantino's kind of the front runner to win with Inglourious Basterds. He's already won before with Pulp Fiction.
Right.
He's not in the Writers Guild, which kind of hurts him, but not really, because it's immensely popular and people kind of agree that it's the best thing he's ever done. If Inglourious Basterds doesn't win Best Picture, which it still has a chance to, it's almost a three-horse race right now.
Right.
Inglourious Basterds still has kind of an outside chance to win Best Picture. If it doesn't, is Best Screenplay Tarantino's win for Inglourious Basterds? Like Pulp Fiction was kind of his Oscar for writing Pulp Fiction was his win because, you know, it was nominated for Best Picture, but it didn't win.
Right.
Is this the same kind of scenario where they give him the screenplay and not the Best Picture?
I think in a sense it is. Inglourious Basterds, I mean, really, when you look at the nominees for screenplay, you know, the two that jump out that are the two possible, really the two possible winners, are The Hurt Locker and Inglourious Basterds. And it's kind of Inglourious Basterds to win because director seems so set for Hurt Locker.
Right.
That Tarantino, he has an outside chance to win, but it's a very outside chance to win director. Screenplay is a much safer bet for him. It's a much easier way to recognize his work in the film, especially if the film doesn't win Best Picture. Mm-hmm. One of the major components to Inglourious Basterds that a lot of people have admired is the screenplay. I mean, in a way, if you look at the acting ensemble of Inglourious Basterds, it is an ensemble piece. There's no real star to it. Brad Pitt is the star in terms of, you know, Hollywood and money and all that, but he's not the star of the film. The real star of Inglourious Basterds is Quentin Tarantino, so it seems only fitting that the Academy is going to recognize him somewhere there. And as you said, a lot of people think that it's his best work, even better than Pulp Fiction. So if Inglourious Basterds is going to win anything besides supporting actor, which we're going to talk about, it would be screenplay original. So your safest bet there is going Inglourious Basterds. If for some reason you don't feel like it's Bastard's year or you don't feel comfortable and you're trying to win an Oscar pool, then really your only other choice would be Hurt Locker. Bastard's would be the one.
Now, if Hurt Locker, I think you can tell whether or not it's going to win early on in the night, you know, when we get into some of the tech awards, which we'll talk about later on a little bit. If Hurt Locker starts winning sound editing, sound mixing, things like that,
it's a good indicator, yeah.
And it can make a run for screenplay, director, and picture, and possibly actor as well.
I think Hurt Locker can still win like some of the more technical categories and not win Best Picture. If you're watching the Oscars as they're unfolding and they start doing the tech categories and you hear Hurt Locker a lot, I don't think that necessarily is going to mean that Hurt Locker will win Best Picture, although, you know, we'll talk about that when we get to it. But if Hurt Locker does win screenplay, I think at that point you know it's set in stone. If it wins director, it could still lose Best Picture. If it wins screenplay, and we'll talk about later, if it wins actor, I think then you're looking at a definite lock to win Best Picture when it starts sweeping the awards. But screenplay is going to be a major indicator for whether or not Hurt Locker is going to take, you know, the Oscars by storm.
The next one is adapted screenplay. The nominees are District 9, An Education, In the Loop, Precious, and Up in the Air. Again, the clear front runner, Up in the Air, Jason Reitman. Nominated for Best Picture, nominated for Best Director.
Right.
It's people think that it's kind of his in the bag. A lot of people like An Education. Nick Hornby, it's kind of his first. He's written a bunch of novels that have been very successful movies, High Fidelity and About a Boy, Fever Pitch.
Right.
But this is his first like real screenplay. People really like it a lot. Also nominated for Best Picture. I kind of like Jason Reitman in this. I think it's probably his to win. The same thing with Tarantino. He's been nominated for Best Director. He's probably not going to win. He's been nominated for Best Picture. He's probably not going to win. He's been nominated before for Best Director, and he has won a couple years ago with Juno. I think this is probably his Oscar year, and they're probably going to give it to him for the fact that he hasn't won anything else. And this will be what he wins tonight.
Right. I mean, I think even if you put aside all the other awards, you know, Golden Globes and Critics Awards that he's won for the screenplay. And let's also forget that he's winning alongside Sheldon Turner, which is kind of a complex situation there that we can talk about. But people are looking at it as Reitman's prize. He's not going to win Best Director this year, but he's so well liked in the industry. Plus, he's son of Ivan Reitman. That at some point he's going to start winning Oscars. A lot of people assume at some point he's going to win a director Oscar with another film in the future. So it seems only right to kind of set the stage by giving him an Oscar now, if you're looking at it from that point of view. Also, Up in the Air is going to have a hard time actually winning an Oscar in other categories. It's probably not going to win Best Picture. It probably won't win Best Director, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actress. It's other awards that it's up for. It's going to have a hard time in those races. If the Oscars are looking for a way to recognize the film with an actual award, screenplay is its easiest bet. And we see that all the time with other films. Like, a good example is Michael Clayton, when Tilda Swinton won Best Supporting Actress. Not that her performance wasn't good at all. It was terrific. But it was the clearest choice of any of the categories that that film was up for to win an Oscar. I think a lot of voters saw that and latched onto that. And so that'll be kind of the same reasoning with Screenplay Adapted. I wouldn't say Screenplay Adapted is completely closed off. If for some reason they don't go for Up in the Air, I think... as you were saying, an Education has a good chance of showing up here. Hornby is an acclaimed author. Another one of his works about a boy, one of his novels, was actually nominated in this category back in 2002. He wasn't nominated because he didn't write it. The Weitz brothers were nominated, but it was nominated for screenplay there. And he's well-liked, and the film is well-liked, and it probably won't win an Oscar anywhere else. So that would be its best bet, or Precious could possibly show up. But really, we're looking at Up in the Air for Screenplay Adapt.
Okay, so now we're going to get into the technical awards, try to move through some of those real quick. First off, we have visual effects. The nominees are Avatar, District 9, and Star Trek. While I like the visual effects in District 9 and Star Trek, and they were far superior movies to Avatar,
right?
It's pretty a safe bet that this is Avatar's award.
Right, I mean, this category of anything almost doesn't require commentary at all. I mean, Avatar is the clear choice for here. I mean, the general population of the Academy see it as a visual effects picture of anything else. It's set to win, and it's also, you know, pretty groundbreaking in what it accomplished. So the Academy will look at that, and Avatar is the easy choice here for visual effects. No questions.
Now, sound editing and sound mixing are two awards that don't necessarily go together. In fact, the nominees are almost the same, except for Transformers is nominated for mixing and not editing, and Up is nominated for editing and not mixing. But the other four are Avatar, The Hurt Locker, and Glorious Bastards, and Star Trek. Now, these are a couple awards that normally they give to pictures that they really like,
right?
But aren't going to win something else. Or it goes the other way, and it's usually indicative of something that is just on a complete sweep to win it. It's the Lord of the Rings thing, where it just picks up everything that it's nominated for.
Right. If you look at the last 2 years, I mean, 2 years ago in 2007, The Bourne Supremacy won both of these awards and obviously wasn't nominated for anything else. But last year, Slumdog Millionaire won Best Sound Mixing, which, you know, what indicated that it was going to sweep all the awards, which it did. It won 8 of its 10 nominations. So, like you were saying, it could go both ways. There is a difference between the awards, of course. Sound mixing is the overall mix of the film, you know, how the music plays in relation to the dialogue and to the effects. Whereas sound editing, you know, in shorthand is basically Foley work. How does the sound effects, you know, match to what's on screen, and how do they work with what's on screen? I don't know if most of the Academy thinks about that when they're voting for these two awards. I don't know if they care. I think a lot of the Academy, it's interchangeable between them. So this year, you're definitely going to see, I think, one film win both of those awards. And when you look at the nominees, you're really looking at Avatar or Hurt Locker, because this is going to be one of those years, like Slumdog winning last year, that, you know, a win in either of these categories is going to indicate that it could win Best Picture, then it probably will win Best Picture. So, I'm almost hard pressed to pick between Avatar and The Hurt Locker here. But if I was a betting man, which I am, I would pick Hurt Locker, only because, Hurt Locker, for starters, plays a lot better at home on television than Avatar does, and I'm assuming that's how a lot of people are watching Hurt Locker. And Hurt Locker, for a lot of voters, will probably be the film, one of the films they see last, or at least they'll see after seeing Avatar, so in my mind it would leave a stronger impression.
It's a nice palate cleanser.
Exactly.
To the sensory
overload of Avatar, right. So to me, Hurt Locker has a little more nuance than Avatar. Avatar is a little more, blast in your face as far as sound is concerned. So I recommend going with Hurt Locker if you're trying to win an office pull for these. The unfortunate thing is there's no musicals nominated because they usually win at least sound mixing. Too bad Dreamgirls didn't come out this year.
Oh, what happened to Nine, man?
That's true. Nine really didn't.
Remember that awesome movie that we saw that was called Nine? Speaking of music,
right.
Original score. The nominees are Avatar, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Hurt Locker, Sherlock Holmes, and Up. I think it's another thing where they see Avatar, they give it to Avatar. It's James Horner.
It's James Horner for Avatar, yeah. You have...
Have you been nominated for?
James Horner?
Yeah.
He's won for Titanic. He won for the score for Titanic and for co-writing the song from Titanic. So he's already an Oscar winner. I think if you look at especially the composers amongst score, you have... James Horner up for Avatar. He's won in the past. You have Hans Zimmer here with Sherlock Holmes, who won in the past for The Lion King, although that was a long time ago. You have Andre Desplat, who wrote Fantastic Mr. Fox. He's been kind of it's hard to call him an up-and-comer, but as far as movie scores are concerned, he's really been popping up in a lot more Hollywood films. He's been nominated a few times in the past. He was recognized for a score for The Queen a few years ago. So he's kind of an up and comer. Although the Fantastic Mr. Fox wasn't that recognized of a film. With Hurt Locker, you've got Marco Beltrami, who was nominated for 3:10 to Yuma, which was a great score, and probably would have won if Atonement wasn't nominated, which did win that year.
Atonement was amazing.
Which was a great score and a great film. So his work in Hurt Locker is a little more subdued. It's definitely something that if you watch the film a second or a third time, you start to notice the score in the film. Not necessarily something that you pay attention to the first time you're watching it. It's a little more, it's less orchestral and more kind of, electronic, drones and things like that, which usually isn't the type of score that gets recognized here in score. You're usually looking for, melodies or fanfares, the John Williams case for score. And if you're looking at it that way, I think really you're looking for Up to win Best Original Score. The score is by Michael Giacchino, who has been nominated in the past. He was nominated for Ratatouille a couple years ago, which was a great score. He's also done scores for other Pixar films like The Incredibles. And he also did the score this year for Star Trek. So he's a well-recognized composer. He hasn't won an Oscar yet. And Up is one of the films, at least in this category, that you walk away from the film and you remember the music. So I think you're looking at Up to win Best Original Score. Mm-hmm.
Original song. The thing that jumps out to me, right, at original song is that there's two from The Princess of the Frog.
Right.
Almost There and Down in New Orleans, which is big for Disney because it was their first animated feature in a long time. And it kind of gets them back to where they wanted to be with the Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and Lion King.
Right.
They're really happy that they got the nominations. I don't think that it wins. I would almost say that if Nine takes an Oscar, it'll take it for this one because Marion Cotillard is probably the best part of that movie.
Right.
And it's her big number. It's a big emotional reveal for a character. But I kind of think The Weary Kind wins from Crazy Heart.
Right.
Just because people are in love with Jeff Bridges right now. And they love everything that he's about, and it's his song in the movie. And I think he probably ends up. I think that one probably ends up winning the Oscar.
Right. I mean, even if you haven't seen Crazy Heart, this song is a song that's featured in the trailer. That I'm sure if you've gone to the movies at all in the last month, you've seen it. You've seen it twice in front of one movie. So yeah. It's a song that people are gonna recognize, and it's been winning all the other song awards. Golden Globes, Critics' Choices, all over the place. So really, you're looking at Crazy Heart. The other songs are kind of almost runs. If anything wins that isn't The Weary Kind, it'd probably be Take It All. But since Nine was so, poorly received by the Academy, I think really this is Crazy Heart's to lose. So So hands down, The Weary Kind wins here.
Now let's get into some of the movies that we don't watch, and those are the short films,
yeah,
short animated and short live action. The nominees for short animated are French Roast, Granny O'Grim's Sleeping Beauty, The Lady and the Reaper, Logorama, and A Matter of Loaf and Death.
Right.
What wins?
I would go with A Matter of Loaf and Death, which is a Wallace and Gromit short. And Wallace and Gromit shorts have done very well here in the past. They've won two Oscars and were nominated for a third. Also, Wallace and Gromit won an Oscar for animated feature a few years back. So it's kind of has that history on its side. Although really the short categories and the documentary categories can always surprise, because the general body of the Academy doesn't vote for these. They're not voting like we're looking at these going, what has the best title or what has the most Holocaust-y sounding title. But they actually have to watch these and rate these and sign an affidavit. So, I mean, really it comes down to the quality of the film and the mindset of the voter when they're watching the films. But if you're going with, you know, what seems most likely, at least in short film animated, you're looking at Loaf and Death. So I would go with that.
Short film live action, the nominees are The Door, Instead of Abracadabra, Kavi, Miracle Fish, and The New Tenants. Which one wins there?
Now, I have to be honest and say that I don't know too much about any of these nominees. Although, from what I've been reading and what I've heard from people, Miracle Fish has been kind of touted as one of the better choices here. So, I would go with Miracle Fish. But at first, I would recommend quickly looking up these choices and see what feels right to you, at least as far as what you know in this category. But if you just want to choose something real quick, I say choose Miracle
Fish. If you know as little as we do.
If you know as little as I do right now, trying to fill space and just go with Miracle Fish.
The documentaries, the nominee for documentary shorts are China's Unnatural Disaster, The Last Campaign of Governor Booth Gardner, The Last Truck, Closing of a GM Plant, Music by Prudence, and Rabbit a la Berlin.
Well, here's the interesting thing about the documentaries is that it doesn't always work this way, but the Academy tends to go for things that are a little more timely. They try to choose documentaries that are either oddly not horribly successful, because you see a lot of big snubs in these categories. A lot of critics complain about the documentary categories. But with the nominees they have, they tend to go with one that's a little more timely and that speaks a little more about what's going on in the world. Between using that criteria for documentary short, China's a Natural Disaster and The Last Truck are the best looking of the five nominees here. And I would give the edge to China's a Natural Disaster only because it's more emotional from what I've heard about the documentaries. It's you know, it kind of tugs on the heartstrings a little bit more than Closing of a GM Plant. But, of course, that's very timely with what's going on in the audio industry right now.
That, and do you think that the kind of the momentum, what little there is left for Up in the Air, will kind of pull The Last Truck along with it? It's in that vein of, you know, American economy, layoffs, people losing jobs. Do you think it could maybe ride its coattails?
I think that's a definite possibility. I think, you know, especially of an Oscar voters recently watched Up in the Air and then they go and they watch the shorts to vote for them. It'll definitely be in their mind, which is why it's going to do pretty well. But I mean, ultimately it comes down to who's actually watching these in the screenings and who's voting. And that's kind of unpredictable, but, you know, I would almost recommend a draw. I almost say that there's a draw between the two here and would recommend, you know, if anybody's trying to win an Oscar pool to go with what feels right to them. I personally would choose the China's a Natural Disaster, but it could go either way. So,
documentary feature, the nominees are Burma VJ, The Cove, Food Inc., The Most Dangerous Man in America, and Which Way Home. Now, I've seen The Cove, mm-hmm. and I've been on it all year. I've been telling as many people as I can to go see it. It's a really powerful film. It's like a very important social issue. It's really well made. It works really well as just a movie besides as a documentary. And, you know, to be more political, it really pushes towards most of the Academy sentiments. It's very left-leaning. It's very much about the environment, and it's anti-government.
Right.
And it's the kind of movie that really appeals to most of these Academy voters, these, you know, latte sipping lefty liberals that most of, you know, that middle America doesn't like. These are the people that vote. These are the people that are going to decide who wins. And I think it's got a lot going for it purely on a political basis.
Right.
Not to mention the fact that, not to take away from the fact that it's an amazing movie as well. It's really good.
Well, I think The Cove is definitely the front runner here. What could end up being detrimental to The Cove winning this Oscar is if you look at the voters who actually watch these features, because they have to watch them in a screening and sign an affidavit that they've watched all the films. The problem being is that most Academy voters, or a lot of Academy voters, don't have the time to do that. So you end up with a very small cross-section, which ends up being usually older voters. The one thing that really hurts The Cove is that there are parts of it that get really tough. I mean, they slaughter dolphins on screen. So it's,
spoiler.
Yeah, sorry there, yeah. I mean, that's what the film's about. So, you know, that's been really squeamish. I've heard a lot of stories of people walking out in screenings
because of that. Yeah, people were walking out when I went to go see it. People were in tears. It is a really tough movie to watch.
And just because a voter walks out in the middle of a screening doesn't mean that they wouldn't necessarily vote for the film. It just might mean it's a little too intense for them, but they still sympathize with the subject matter. But that's really the hardest challenge to The Cove, is to get people to sit down and watch the whole thing.
Now, if there's a popular opponent for The Cove, it's probably Food Inc.
Yes.
That runs in the same vein, where some of it's kind of squeamish. You know, they take you inside like slaughterhouses and stuff like that. It's very Upton Sinclair.
Right. The interesting thing about Food Inc. to me is that you know, I noticed earlier in the year around April and May, a lot of people were passing screeners of Food Inc. around the office. And I heard a lot of people talking about Food Inc. back then. I think if Food Inc. had come out later in the year, people might be talking more about it as a front runner. And I think that it could be a spoiler to The Cove, definitely. So if something's going to win, that's not The Cove, it's Food Inc. Although The Cove is probably going to win. Before we move on from documentary, probably the most interesting thing about the category are the snubs. There were some pretty big notable snubs, which is usual, which is the usual case in this category. I mean, it goes back as far as Hoop Dreams.
Yeah.
Being one of the most acclaimed films of that year and not being nominated for documentary.
Did you ever watch it? That's your part of the criterion.
I did watch it finally.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's a great film. It's a great film. Documentary with aside, I mean, it's just a great story anyway.
Hoop Dreams is amazing.
This year, probably the most notable snub besides Capitalism, which, you know, as we're seeing, Michael Moore is kind of not the Academy's taste anymore, especially thanks to his acceptance speech for Bowling for Columbine, was probably Anvil, the story of Anvil, which was, you know, a documentary that was well-loved. But music documentaries don't do very well here.
Concert films don't really do well.
No.
Commercially or critically. But Anvil did. Anvil was the exception. People loved it. You know, it kind of, and it had a good story to it, too.
Right.
You know, it brought the band back to prominence. I mean, these guys that have been, you know, running their little band around the world for over 20 years and stuff like that. The movie was popular. It made the band popular again.
Right.
You know, I think some of their music's on like Rock Band and stuff like that. You can get it. Like, that's how popular they are now.
It is the highest grossing documentary of last year. Yeah. I mean, and that almost never helps a documentary for whatever reason. Making a lot of money does not help documentaries unless you're Bowling for Columbine. So not a surprise that it didn't get nominated here. And even if it did get nominated, it'd probably have a run like Super Size Me, where it was massively popular, but it was going to lose anyway. So.
Well, Super Size Me is just a bad movie.
Well, let's besides that.
The next three also kind of run together because they have to do with the look of the film. The first one is makeup.
Mm-hmm.
The nominees are Il Divo, Star Trek, and The Young Victoria. Could be the only win for Star Trek. I think
probably will be the
where
only
I'm leaning.
Yeah, I mean, Star Trek is nominated for 4 this year. Visual effects, it won't win. Sound, it won't win. The 2 sound categories, it won't win. So makeup is its best chance at a win. And if you look at these films, Young Victoria and Il Divo and Star Trek has the most prominent makeup. You know, Young Victoria has a lot of glamour makeup. There are some prosthetic pieces as far as like hair pieces are concerned. Il Divo deals with a lot of aging makeup. But Star Trek is the most well-known of these three, and, you know, and it basically had to recreate characters. You know, it reimagined Romulans, it reimagined Spock. There were a lot of alien creatures that were created specifically for this film. It's the type of film that usually does pretty well in the makeup categories, especially when, you know, it's up against more glamour makeup. So I think this is a pretty easy call for Star Trek. Though if something's going to surprise, it could be Young Victoria, but Star Trek more than likely is going to win this one.
Now, in costume design, the nominees are Bright Star, Coco Before Chanel, The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, Nine, and The Young Victoria. I like The Young Victoria to win this one. The Academy really loves Victorian era kind of English period pieces like that. It's huge on those kind of movies. I think if anything else win, it might be Coco Before Chanel, just because, like you said, they recreate a lot of stuff that happened before. They recreate a lot of the early Chanel lines, and that might have them going for them. But I do like Young Victoria in this category.
I think that, you know, the Academy has shown a more than a passing interest in awarding period pieces, and specifically, you know, British, you know, 1800s pieces in this category, as opposed to fantasy pieces or things that are a little more contemporary. It's definitely on the side of the Young Victoria. There could be a surprise, though, with Bright Star. If, you know, people are voting for the best looking costumes and for costumes that are integrated into the plot, I mean, Bright Star and Coco Before Chanel are more or less, in one way or another, about people making garments. I mean, Coco Before Chanel obviously is about Coco Chanel. And Bright Star, Bright Star's female protagonist makes all her own clothes in the film. It's also the most recognized, and indeed it's the only nomination for either film, which doesn't hurt it in costume. I mean, the Duchess won this category last year. But if you're going to see a surprise, it would be either one of those two. I right now, I would tend to agree with you that Young Victoria has the lead on this, but I wouldn't be surprised with Coco Before Chanel.
And then there's Art Direction. And the nominees are Avatar, The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus again, Nine, Sherlock Holmes, and The Young Victoria. There's a lot of things that go into Art Direction.
Right.
You know, it's not just
sets.
Yeah. You know, but it's props. It's a combination of how these things all work together. And it basically informs the look of the picture. Going strictly on that generalized, you know, summary of it, which most people tend to do.
Right.
I think it's another one where they look at Avatar, they see Avatar, they pick Avatar.
Avatar is a relatively easy choice in this category. The only thing that really hurts is that it's primarily CG, which a film like that hasn't won in this category before.
Older Academy voters will not vote for it.
Yeah, I think older Academy voters, and certainly people who don't like Avatar, and there will be a number of them.
There's a contingent out there.
Yeah, will not vote for Avatar in this category, which is why you could possibly see surprises with something like The Young Victoria, which is period, or Sherlock Holmes, which is kind of a fantasy period hybrid steampunk kind of look. A film like that hasn't necessarily won in this category before, but this could be a place where Sherlock Holmes could win an Oscar. But really, you're looking at Avatar. I mean, they had to create a whole world, and I think a lot of people, even if they don't like the film, recognize the amount of work and the amount of effort and the amount of design that had to go into it. So Avatar could make some history on Oscar night by winning this category. So I go with Avatar.
Speaking of the look of it, cinematography, the nominees are Avatar, Hurt Locker, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, The Inglourious Basterds, and White Ribbon. Now, we all know the job of the cinematographer is not an easy one.
No, it's not.
Almost did that in my Christian Bale voice. I thought it would,
surprised to see Terminator Salvation not nominated.
Yeah. Just robbed.
Right.
Robbed. Yeah. The biggest nominee is probably Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, the only Oscar that is nominated for this year.
Right.
Again, is it between Hurt Locker and Avatar?
For cinematography? You know, they both have their own challenges. I mean, Hurt Locker had to achieve a lot on a really small budget and in really really tight scheduling in some pretty hairy places. And they did a great job. But it's not pretty pictures, which unfortunately is a lot of what Academy voters think of as cinematography.
It's shaky cam. They don't like shaky cam.
Yeah, they don't like shaky cam at all. They usually go with, you know, what has the most beautiful vistas, which isn't necessarily the art of cinematography at all. Cinematography is not pretty pictures. It's good lighting. But I think rarely do you see a film that has some great moody, great lighting win an Oscar, because a lot of voters don't quite get, or not that they don't get what cinematography is, but they usually vote for what looks the best rather than what's technically the best, which could go with any category.
Really. So you're leaning towards Inglourious Basterds, is what you're saying?
I think Inglourious Basterds has some great lighting, definitely, was it Robert Richardson?
Robert Richardson.
Yeah, he's won in the past. You know, even as recently as The Aviator. Yeah. He did some great work in Inglourious Basterds. To me, though, it seems like White Ribbon could have a lock on this category. Even people who don't watch the film, who only see, say, the trailers, I mean, those images stick in your mind. I mean, it's some beautiful shots, and there it's a lot of tricks with lighting, because black and white is harder to light than color.
Right.
Although a black and white film hasn't won here since Schindler's List. I mean, even though there's a couple of color elements, it's technically a black and white film.
Now, is White Ribbon one of the movies that it's been popular in the recent years? I know they did it with Control, where it's shot in color and then in post they make it in black and white. So it's not lit for black and white, but in post they color correct it to black and white. Because I know they did it with Control, and I thought I had read that they did that with White Ribbon.
Well, actually, White Ribbon is one of those films, like Control, and Good Night and Good Luck,
right,
that were originally shot in color and then posted in black and white. But you know, speaking in terms of the final aesthetic, I mean, a black and white film hasn't won here in over 15 years. So it's in that sense, it sort of has history against it, especially when films like Good Night and Good Luck and The Man Who Wasn't There were nominated in this category and didn't win. But they likely didn't win because there were stronger films that were nominated. I believe those films lost to Lord of the Rings and something else.
Not being Lord of the Rings.
And not being Lord of the Rings, yeah. The only other really interesting thing here to note is that Avatar is nominated for cinematography. Large portions of Avatar are artificial, are completely computer generated. So for it to be nominated here is interesting because, you know, even a lot of the environments are CG as well. So the lighting, one, is kind of tricky for the live action elements that are there. But if Avatar would win cinematography, then that is a pretty clear sign that Avatar could win Best Picture.
Now, the fact that James Cameron designs his own cameras for this picture,
right,
operates them a lot. I think he's credited as an operator, but he's not the DP,
right,
on it. But he did do a lot of the camera work himself. Does that swing things in Avatar's favor, just on a purely
on a technical level?
Technical level,
right? And on a technical level, I mean, it is the first 3D film nominated for cinematography, which in and of itself poses its own technical challenges, which is probably why it is nominated here. But I mean, it does have the fact that it's largely computer generated up against it. Although that didn't, so far that's hurt films in the past. It hasn't hurt them so much getting nominated in the last couple of years with films like Benjamin Button. But in terms of winning, you know, I think a lot of Oscar voters still depend on, you know, pretty vistas and actual physical locations to go with what they want to win the Oscar. So in that sense, you're looking at a film like Inglourious Basterds or White Ribbon to win here.
So cinematography, I'm picking Avatar. What are you picking?
I'm picking White Ribbon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, in foreign language film, White Ribbon is nominated along with Ajami. I'm sure I screwed that up. El Secreto de Sus Ojos. My Spanish is terrible.
We need to take your card away.
It's bad as my English.
Yeah.
The Milk of Sorrow and Un Profit. Which one wins here? Obviously, I'm thinking White Ribbon because it's nominated for another major category. Are you leaning towards White Ribbon as well, that tongue twister of a title?
I think White Ribbon is a clear favorite in this category. If anything, you know, has the odds to win, it would be White Ribbon. It touches on a lot of what the Academy likes. It's not necessarily about World War II, but it kind of sets up, you know, the course of German history. I mean, it takes place, you know, in the earlier part of last century. But, you know, it has a kind of mood to it. It has a sense of history about it. So it's got that going for it. Plus, it plays well to older voters. It's kind of a quieter film. It's a powerful film with very little action actually in it, but a couple turns and, you know, you walk away and you're pretty, you have your breath taken away from you. It'll play better with older voters, which are the kind of voters that have to watch these to vote for them anyway.
That, and is one of the pictures that is almost a parody of what you expect Oscar pictures to be. When you think about movies, right, that are quiet, that have children, that are in black and white,
right,
that are foreign.
Yeah.
It's almost, I think Haneke, he plays with that a little bit, because the movies that he's made up to this point are very contemporary, you know, the movies like Funny Games and things like that.
Yeah.
Very socially relevant to these times. I think going back to a movie like White Ribbon, he's not really poking fun of it, but the dude's, he's a pretty smart guy as a director. I think he knows what he's doing.
I think he's aware that when he was making this film that it was going to have a certain appeal and acclaim internationally because of the type of film it is, not necessarily because of the filmmaking.
Right.
Because he's I mean, if you look at his other films, like you were saying, Funny Games, the original Funny Games,
right.
Cachet, The Piano Teacher. I mean, these are kind of great contemporary films that aren't American films. But, you know, this is a definitely departure for him in terms of what he's doing, and it's generally considered to be a good film, although it definitely plays into the Academy's strengths and what they want in a foreign language film. If a film is going to surprise here, or White Ribbon isn't going to win, if another film's going to win besides White Ribbon, you're looking at Un Profit. What hurts Un Profit is that it is violent and that it definitely skews to a somewhat younger voter. By younger, I mean anybody under 60. There aren't a lot of those people that are going to be able to watch these films and vote on them, because you have to watch all five in a screening and then vote. So a lot of people that would like Un Profit won't be able to vote. It's the same reason why Pan's Labyrinth didn't win foreign language film, even though it was a heavy favorite. You know, why films like that don't do as well is because the people who do like those films aren't able to vote because of work commitments or whatever else. Right. So you have a pretty older voter base that goes for films like The Lives of Others or, I think, White Ribbon. So you're looking at White Ribbon for this one.
Now, from the movies that the older voters like to the movies that the younger voters like. You see how I did that? A little segue right there. Animated feature. The nominees are Coraline, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Princess and the Frog, The Secret of Khalees, and Up. All of them are very strong pictures.
Right.
If it weren't for the fact that Up is already nominated for Best Picture, you could say it's wide open, but it could surprise. Coraline and Fantastic Mr. Fox are, people really like them.
Right.
And they could challenge Up. It's almost pretty sure that it's Up. I'm picking Up. What do you say?
Yeah, the smart money is on Up, definitely, because if Up wasn't nominated for Best Picture, no question it would win here. The only thing that the Best Picture nomination throws into question is just, will people who are voting for Up for Best Picture also vote for it for animated film? They might look to spread the wealth, and that would take votes away from Up in this category. If Up doesn't win here, like you're saying, Coraline and Fantastic Mr. Fox are the strongest choices. Fantastic Mr. Fox definitely plays to a more kind of sly Academy voter. I mean, it is directed by Wes Anderson, so it has that cred to it. I think a lot of actors would probably like it. Coraline is, you know, kind of a little more friendly, traditional choice in this category if you're not looking it up. But really, this is Up's to lose. And Up is probably not going to win Best Picture. There's, you know, fair chance it's not going to win Best Picture. So this would be where Up would win. So it's kind of the consolation prize for Up, as it were.
Right. Yeah, an Oscar is a consolation prize.
Right. But also, I think that you can't, and we'll talk about it more when we get to Best Picture, but Up is the second film, animated film, to ever be nominated for Best Picture after Beauty and the Beast. And, you know, I think Up's nomination there is only due to the fact that there are 10 nominees. Even though it was widely acclaimed, you know, you couldn't see a film like Ratatouille or WALL-E in recent years break in there, and they won animated feature instead. So I think that the same will hold true with Up. I think Up is winning animated feature despite its Best Picture nomination.
So no surprises there. No. Up's to lose in animated feature. Now, the categories where it seems to me that there's always a surprise,
right,
are the acting category.
Sure.
Let's start with the supporting. Start with supporting actress. No, let's start with supporting actor, because I got a surprise in supporting actress, and let's get to a supporting actor.
Sure.
Matt Damon in Invictus, Woody Harrelson in The Messenger, Christopher Plummer in The Last Station, Stanley Tucci in The Lovely Bones, and Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds. No surprise here.
No surprise.
Absolutely, hands down, Christoph Waltz is walking off an Oscar on March 7th.
I think, you know, the majority of critics and Oscar voters and, you know, audience who have seen a lot of these films, I mean, Christoph Waltz was the best supporting actor of last year. He just did an amazing job in Inglourious Basterds. And he kind of follows an interesting track of you know, being an actor who has worked for a very long time. This is his first, like, film on an international stage. People are just discovering him now and discovering what he can do. It's a great performance, and he kind of has snuck in here during award season and then has won every supporting actor award that there is. I think the only time that he hasn't won an award was with one of the either like Boston or Phoenix film critics who gave it to Paul Schneider for Bright Star instead. But Christoph Waltz has won every other award in the field, so I mean easily, he's the one to win in this one.
Well, he's the nominee that not only is he the strong favorite to win, right, but he probably is, like you said, he's the best one this year. It's like Bardem in No Country for Old Men.
Right.
He's just the strongest performance in the movie. He's lucky to be nominated for supporting, because if he's nominated for lead, he wouldn't win. But everybody likes him as a performance. Everybody likes him as a person, as an actor. Mm-hmm. Hands down, nobody... none of the other nominees are going to be upset that they lose to Christoph Waltz.
No, because they've lost to him like every other award that has come up. And also his performance in this kind of fits, you know, a general criteria to win an Oscar in this category, which is a villainous performance. Certainly the last 2 years, villains have won. You know, Javier Bardem and Heath Ledger have won this Oscar. And, you know, going back and looking at past winners in this category, you see a lot of villains win here. So he kind of follows that history of this is a good place to be recognized. Also, let's not forget that he did win Best Actor at Cannes, and that, you know, depending on how you want to look at the film, he could be a lead actor technically, although I don't look at it that way. But he, you know, he's won acting prizes internationally. He's won them here in the States. You know, everyone just recognizes what he's brought to the film and that he is kind of the star of the film. And regardless of whatever happens in Best Picture or Best Screenplay, I mean, Inglourious Basterds is walking away for an Oscar, and it will be for Christoph Waltz. The only unfortunate thing about the lock on Christoph Waltz is that there are four other performances here that are, you know, arguably, you know, good to brilliant, that, you know, it where it's just not their year. You have an actor like Woody Harrelson, who was nominated back for People versus Larry Flint, who gives another great performance. He had a lot of momentum on him early. I think actually he won the National Board of Review, which was the first awards that were handed out this year. But, you know, he's since, you know, seen most of the awards go to Christoph Waltz. But he's a great performer. He gives a great performance. He's much liked there. And then you have an actor like Christopher Plummer, who... you know, has had this like sprawling career, you know, a lot of respect, a lot of admiration, and has never been nominated for an Oscar before. He's kind of the Lauren Bacall this year in this category, as it were, except that, you know, it's actually, you know, a good performance in a good film as opposed to a pretty good performance in an okay film, and that, if you're using that example. So it's unfortunate for him that Christoph Waltz is nominated here, because if not, Christopher Plummer would have probably won in this category with history on the side.
Doesn't supporting actor usually tend to be the category where it's like everybody should win?
Right.
But someone is clearly going to win.
Right. It's, well, I mean, I would argue against maybe one or two of the other nominees, but I mean, they've been nominated for other awards this season. It's hardly a surprise that they're nominated here. And I like both of the other actors. I like Matt Damon and Stanley Tucci. But
we love Matt Damon.
We love Matt Damon.
We want him to be our friend.
You know, and with Stanley Tucci, I mean, he gives a great performance in Lovely Bones, but I would go so far as to say he should have been nominated for Julia, not the Lovely Bones, because Lovely Bones is a bit broad. Plus, it's interesting to note that, you know, after all the hype and all the buzz, you know, his nomination as the Lovely Bones is only Oscar nomination. Yeah. So he's probably not going to win for that, but he's well-liked within the Academy. All these actors are well-liked within the Academy. I mean, it's a great category. It's just... Christoph Waltz has all this momentum, and it's hardly going to be a surprise when he wins the Oscar.
Supporting actress. The nominees are Penelope Cruz in Nine, Vera Farmiga in Up in the Air, Maggie Gyllenhaal in Crazy Heart, Anna Kendrick in Up in the Air, and Monique in Precious. clearly, Monique is the favorite.
Clearly, Monique is the favorite. You know, even even someone like me who didn't, we're talking from our own point of view, that I didn't, I liked Precious, I didn't love Precious. I came out of the theater just amazed at her performance. And for most of the film, I wasn't even into her performance that much until the end. And she has that final scene, and it really gets you. And you know, most voters, I'm sure at this point, have seen Precious and would agree with that. Even if they're not particularly fans of the film, they see her work in the film. And it's like Christoph Waltz in supporting actor. You know, it's a great performance. There's no doubt about that. And she's probably going to win the Oscar. I mean, there's kind of no doubt that she's going to win the Oscar at this point, which is great for her and great for the film. But that you have these other performances that are also great that aren't being recognized. It's not that it's a weak field with a really strong contender. It's a strong field with someone who's just been the front runner all of the awards season. So really, I mean, it would be a huge shock if Monique didn't win this category.
I'm saying that this is the category where there is a shock.
Ah, okay.
To me, I think that this is the category where there's a surprise. And I'm going with what I've been saying since December. I think Anna Kendrick wins.
Okay.
I think her performance really holds Up in the Air together. Clooney's not going to win.
No.
Vera Farmiga is not going to win. It's not going to win for Best Picture. It's not going to win for Best Director. It might win for Best Screenplay. I think Anna Kendrick sneaks in here. I think she's young. I think a lot of people like her. You know, the Twilight movies notwithstanding.
Right.
I think while there's not a backlash against Precious, I think there is a trend to want to give it to something more uplifting and something a little bit more happy. I'm not telling anybody else to do it. On my Oscar ballot, I am marking off Anna Kendrick.
Ah, yes. Well, I mean, she gives a great performance in Up in the Air. And again, I think if Monique wasn't around, I mean, I think a lot more people would be talking about her as sort of the presumptive front runner to win this Oscar. So if Monique doesn't win, I could definitely see Anna Kendrick winning here. You know, as we've talked, I prefer Vera Farmiga
yeah.
In that film myself. But, you know, I see where the traditional logic goes behind Anna Kendrick, and also why there's all the love for Anna Kendrick and why you like Anna right. Kendrick as much for her performance. So I can understand that. So, I mean, between the Up in the Air girls, it is Anna Kendrick. But like we were saying, it's Monique's to lose. Supporting actress is kind of interesting when you look at the other two nominees, because most people pretty much assumed that Monique and the Up in the Air girls were going to get nominated. No questions. And then there were kind of two open slots. And they went with Penelope Cruz, who'd been nominated for quite a few other awards. And she just won last year for Vicky Cristina Barcelona. But the surprise there with her actually being nominated for the Oscar is that since she's been nominated for Golden Globe and SAG, people who have seen the film, because she was nominated when the films weren't open.
Yeah.
People who have seen the film have largely considered Marion Cotillard to be the strongest thing in the film. Everything withstanding, performances, direction, songs, everything. Marion Cotillard is the best thing about Nine.
And gets snubbed in favor of Penelope Cruz, a past winner, who wins for a performance that is very similar to Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Yeah.
Some of the roles that she's done in the past. I love Penelope Cruz. You know, I love Penelope
Cruz. And I love me some Penelope Cruz too.
But I like her more in the you know, a mold of our movies where she does something different than what,
as opposed to just playing a sex pot.
The Latin Spitfire,
yeah.
As it were. Which she kind of does in Nine.
Right.
And I agree with you, Marion Cotillard is a much stronger performance, and her snub, I'm sure she's not holding any animosity towards...
No, because she has Penelope. An Oscar herself right. already.
But right. her snub in this is Penelope Cruz's game.
Right, right. And I would say that her snub here is also a result of the Weinsteins' campaign for Nine, where they were trying to campaign for her for lead actress, which was a big misstep because there is no lead actress in Nine. There's Daniel Day-Lewis, and then there's all the women. So really, she was a supporting performance, and I think maybe Oscar voters got a little confused, or some voted for her in supporting, and some voted for her an actress, because I'm sure anybody who saw the film voted for her, but the fact that she was kind of split because of the campaign hurt her. That campaign also hurt the girls for Inglourious Basterds, which is a little bit of a surprise that one of them didn't pop up here. Now, Diane Kruger was nominated for the supporting actress at the SAGs, but most Bastards fans really loved Melanie Laurent, who was pushed as lead actress for most of the award season, and just at the very end, Weinstein switched the campaign to supporting thinking she'd have a much better chance in supporting, which she would. But unfortunately, it caused some confusion. So like Marion Cotillard, she went without being nominated. And because some voters would have nominated her in supporting, they didn't nominate Diane Kruger. So the votes got, split. And that's how you have Maggie Gyllenhaal nominated for Crazy Heart, which is nominated as one of those nominees that, you know, there's a strong lead performance that people really love, like Jeff Bridges. And people see that film. They love that film. It's probably the last film that they see before they turn in their ballot. And they're filling out their ballots and they go, oh, Maggie Gyllenhaal was really good in this movie, too. And she gets on the ballots as well. That same logic, when I was predicting who'd be nominated for supporting actor, I thought would bring Anthony Mackie a nomination for Hurt Locker, since Jeremy Renner was getting nominated. But it didn't work for him, but it worked for Maggie Gyllenhaal, who, on the other hand, is well-respected, and she's popped up in a lot of films, and people can argue.
Before, right?
Actually, she hasn't been nominated.
She wasn't nominated for Sherry Baby?
No. No. She was snubbed for Sherry Baby, and she was snubbed for Secretary, and a lot of people...
Did she win a Golden Globe for Sherry Baby, or is she just nominated?
I think just nominated for that one. So, it's sort of like long time coming. She finally found a film that people generally liked.
She's a great actress, and it's one of those things where she'll get her turn again. She's Ellen Page, and she'll be around, and, you know.
Right.
And Kate wins the thing, or they keep pushing it off, and finally she gets it.
Right. Like, if you want to go with odds, I mean, Monique will win here, and she'll probably never be nominated again, just because she'll never get a role as good as her role in Precious, whereas...
Jennifer Hudson.
Right. Whereas Maggie Gyllenhaal, you know, she gets a lot of work, and she does a lot of these types of roles, and so there's a fair chance she's going to pop up again.
That moves us right into leading actress, and it's a big one this year. Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side, Helen Mirren in The Last Station, Carrie Mulligan in An Education, say this name because I'm going to mess it up.
Gabourey Sidibe.
There you go, in Precious, and a little actress you might have heard of called Meryl Streep in Julie and Julia. The funny thing about this category is that to me, I woke up one day and looked at who won the Golden Globes, and for Best Dramatic Actress was Sandra Bullock, mm-hmm. and for Best Actress in a Comedy or Musical was Julie and Julia.
Yeah.
Meryl Streep. And I thought I'd woken up in Bizarro World, where up is down.
Right, exactly.
Right is left, cats are dogs.
Well, it would have been stranger, I think, if Meryl Streep had won for The Proposal and Sandra Bullock had won for Doubt. I mean, I think that's what we're generally thinking of here.
Well, what if Sandra Bullock had won for The Blind Side and Meryl Streep had won for It's Complicated?
Well... Yeah,
the romantic comedy versus the, you know, feel-goody Oscar movie about, you know, white people helping black people. You know, because that's...
Because that happens all the time.
Because we've never seen that before. Because that'll make Academy voters feel good about themselves.
Well, I think, you know, it is strange that, you know, the shoe is on the other foot with the Golden Globes. And that Sandra Bullock has been so well-received this award season, although it's really not that surprising. I mean, she's made Hollywood a lot of money over the last few years. She's had a long
career.
This year
in particular.
This year in particular. I mean, she had, The Proposal made over $150 million. Now The Blind Side's made close to $300 at this point. I mean, it's crazy money. She's one of those hardworking actresses that everybody likes. She's a Julia Roberts type. I mean, she's always kind of been a Julia Roberts type. But now this year, we kind of see that. She's very likable, and that's why a lot of voters are responding to her in this role. You know, it's probably one of her most acclaimed performances, certainly one of her most popular performances. And it's one of those, like, long time coming. She's one of the few female big stars that are out there. So it only makes sense that at some point she gets nominated for an Oscar, and it's for this movie that's been hugely successful.
She gets nominated. Does she win?
You know, the unfortunate thing for Meryl Streep, who kind of was the front runner through most of this, is that Meryl Streep suffers from the problem that she's been suffering from the last few years, which is, oh, she gets nominated every year. She'll get nominated again. We can give her, you know, just pass it off. Like, well, next year. Meryl Streep already has two Oscars, although it's been almost 30 years since she won her last Oscar. At some point, you know, pretty much everyone assumes that she is going to win another Oscar. And her problem here, definitely, as opposed to something like Doubt, which was a great, dramatic Meryl Streep performance, or even like The Devil Wears Prada, which was a very iconic performance, is that Julie and Julia is not necessarily considered her best work. So for her to win here, it's almost like that kind of lifetime achievement, let's give them a competitive Oscar, even though she already has two. For a performance that is great, because Meryl Streep can, you know, isn't not great, but it's not her best work. It would be like if she won for Mamma Mia. You know, it's that type of idea where We're not looking at her best work this year. We're looking at her best work of the year, but we're not looking at her best work career-wise. So that's what hurts Meryl Streep. But then everyone loves Meryl Streep, so it makes it really hard to vote against her when you look at her career. But when you're looking strictly at the performances and the popularity of the moment, you're looking at Sandra Bullock, who probably won't be nominated again. And so a lot of people are looking at that as a reason to vote for her now, because better to be an Oscar winner than to be, you know, a 16-time nominee.
Well, here's the unfortunate thing, too. If Sandra Bullock wins,
yeah,
do we start seeing more movies from her, like Blindside, or does she go back to All About Steve and just kind of leave us alone?
Well, hopefully she'll stop doing movies like All About Steve, because God knows I don't want to see any more of those. And obviously, because of the box office, nobody else does either.
Oh, they went to go see The Proposal instead.
Yeah,
they went, All About Steve.
Yeah, they...
I guess there's a fine line between Ryan Reynolds and Bradley Cooper.
There's a very fine line between Ryan Reynolds and Bradley Cooper there. Sandra Bullock will be one of those actresses, I think, that, you know, her career is not going to change with her Oscar. It's going to be a great, you know, cap for her career. You know, it'll be the first line of her obituary. You know, but it's not going to change her career any. I mean, you don't see Reese Witherspoon doing different films than she did before she won for Walk the Line. She's still doing Four Christmases. I mean, her career hasn't changed. Julia Roberts' career really hasn't changed. And I don't think Sandra Bullock's is either. What would be a career changer would be if an actress like Carey Mulligan or Gabourey Sidibe won here, because they're relatively unknown. I mean, for Gabourey, it's her first film. And it would definitely give them a lot of career momentum. But I don't think the Oscar helps any of the other nominees.
You don't see either of them winning. You think it's Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock has a lot in favor of her. And if one person is going to win, if I had to choose right now, I go Sandra Bullock. But if there is a surprise, I would not look at Meryl Streep as a surprise. I would actually look at Gabourey Sidibe as a surprise. Because a lot of people are voting for Monique. And Monique's probably going to win the Best Supporting Actress. A lot of people are either going to see or have already seen Precious. And if they think like me, who I was sort of lukewarm on the film, as much as Monique was good in the film, Gabourey Sidibe was the best thing in Precious. She was Precious. And she carried that movie. So if there is going to be a surprise in this category, I think it's going to be her. But, I mean, realistically, we're looking at this is Sandra Bullock's award.
So that takes us directly to lead actor.
Right.
Again, Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart, George Clooney in Up in the Air, Colin Firth in A Single Man, Morgan Freeman in Invictus, and the big surprise here, obviously, is, or maybe not as obvious to you as it is to me, right, is Jeremy Renner in Hurt Locker. Right. We both saw Hurt Locker together. Yes. Loved it. Loved Renner.
Yes.
Thought he was amazing. Never, I don't know about you, I never thought he would get nominated for an Oscar.
Right. Well, even when I remember when we walked out of the theater back in July when it opened, I think we saw it opening weekend in Los Angeles.
I think so, yeah.
Arclight, yeah. We walked out, we thought it was a great, amazing film, and I don't think either of us thought that it was going to be nominated for Oscars anywhere. There was a little bit of buzz around Kathryn Bigelow possibly popping up in director, but there wasn't a lot of Oscar buzz at the time at all. And it's since snowballed, and Jeremy Renner being nominated is a bit of a surprise in the overall picture. But if you're looking at the award season, I mean, he has been singled out a few times. He hasn't won anything.
Right.
But he has been singled out, at some of the bigger awards, you know, in the awards race. So his showing up here isn't that much of a surprise. And it is very indicative of the love for Hurt Locker, the fact that he did get nominated.
And if you saw him on the Today Show when the nominees are announced,
yeah,
you know that, like, this nomination is the peak of not just his career, but the dude's life. I mean, he's not a young guy. He's 39.
Right.
He's been working for a while in very small roles in small movies. I think the biggest thing he was probably ever in was, like, SWAT. And he's just played, like, the bad guy.
Right, yeah. I mean, as far as if we're talking commercially, like, that's the biggest, like, thing
Hollywood
that she's
movies.
This is
his big shot. It'll probably propel him to, you know, maybe a comic book movie or something like that.
Right.
Why.
Oh, God.
But he's a guy who is genuinely just blown away by even being nominated.
Right.
You know, because like you said, when we walked out, we're like, it's a little movie, it's really great. Hopefully it'll get some love, but probably not. The nomination is the win for him. He doesn't win here.
Who does?
Who can beat Jeff Bridges?
Who can beat Jeff Bridges? That is the question here, because, I mean, all along, the campaign for Jeff Bridges has been, when is he going to win an Oscar? I mean, even when you watch a regular trailer for Crazy Heart, the first thing you see is four-time Academy Award nominee. I mean, like, they're making the point, hey, he hasn't won yet. Let's give him an Oscar. And clearly a lot of people feel that Crazy Heart is his best performance. You know, he's had a long career. He's well-respected. You know, he's loved throughout not only the film community, but, you know, with fans and with critics.
He has family history.
Yes, he has family history. You know, he has himself an Oscar history, meaning he's got four nominations with no wins. You know, he has that overdue factor. A lot of people feel it's a career best performance. It's kind of debatable, but a lot of people feel that way about Crazy Heart. So he's got a lot on his side. It's almost like the perfect story for Jeff Bridges. And so it's really hard to see anybody else win here besides him because he fits kind of all the criteria. He checks all the boxes. What's tough about Jeff Bridges and his campaign is what it did for everybody else that's nominated here. I mean, George Clooney was a front runner for a while, even though he had recently won an Oscar. But Up in the Air, his buzz went with Up in the Air's buzz, which was it was great and it was great and it was building. And then finally the film got released. And it wasn't that the film was disappointing because people liked the film, although it hasn't been a huge box office success. But that, you know, its buzz got killed by, you know, the rise of Hurt Locker and, of course, by Avatar being released. And that hurt George Clooney. Plus, he's won recently. So while he's well-loved, especially in light of all of his work with Haiti in the last few weeks, you know, he has won recently, so he probably won't win. Colin Firth had a lot going for him before Jeff Bridges rose up, which was that sort of, you know, he's been around for a while. He'd never been nominated before. Everyone loves him. He's been in some huge box office successes.
He's in Mamma Mia.
There you go. And he was looking really good to win. It was going to be between Clooney and Firth, but then Jeff Bridges kind of rose up. And what's interesting about Jeff Bridges and how he rose up was that Crazy Heart was supposed to be released in March, and Fox Searchlight had a whole campaign built around Amelia. And when Amelia tanked and got horrible reviews, they quickly switched gears and rushed the release of Crazy Heart to get any awards traction. And now, you know, it's probably going to get Jeff Bridges an Oscar, where as opposed to if it opened in March next year. I mean, hard to say at this point, but he probably wouldn't win the Oscar unless people really fell in love with the performance over the course of the year. So really, this is Jeff Bridges to win. If you ask me, I know you were saying that Jeremy Renner nomination is the win here. If someone's going to win besides Jeff Bridges, which is very unlikely, I think Jeremy Renner could surprise here. And if he does win, then Hurt Locker is clearly going to be Oscar's big choice.
If by 7:30, 8 o'clock, Hurt Locker's already won everything that it's nominated for, Renner wins for Best Oscar, and Hurt Locker wins for Best Picture.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So, just so we're clear, in the best acting categories, you have no surprises.
I have no surprises.
Bridges, Bullock, Monique, and Christoph Waltz winning everything.
Right.
Okay. And my only dissension in there is
Anna Kendrick.
Okay. All right.
And it's not that Oscars can't surprise. I mean, we frequently see a lot of surprises pop up in the acting categories. Probably one of the bigger ones of the last, like, you know, 15 or 20 years was Marcia Gay Harden winning for supporting actress. Because not only did she beat Kate Hudson, who was, well, the favorite to win that year, but she hadn't been nominated for any other awards but the Oscar. I mean, Maggie Gyllenhaal would have that on her side, but that's a very extreme case. I mean, there are frequently surprises. Every once in a while, you know, one of the categories opens up and shocks. But, you know, last year that didn't happen. The year before that, I don't believe it happened either, and I don't think it's going to happen again this year. I think the big surprise is could possibly come in Best Picture.
All right, well, we're going to take a break here and come back in a couple of days for the second half of Graham and Mike Help You Win Your Office Oscar Poll. We're going to wrap up our last couple technical awards, going to get to Best Director, and we're going to tell you who wins Best Picture this year at the Oscars. See you soon. Let me hear your Oscar acceptance speech.
My Oscar
acceptance? Yes. You have just won an Oscar for, you've won Best Picture.
As a producer.
Well, you are a producer. You're credited as a producer. You may have also written and or directed it. But you are accepting the Oscar for, and the winner is Shady Graham Greenleaf.
So now I'm producing films called Shady.
I don't know why you produce a film called Shady. It's just the first word that popped in my head.
That's kind of shady, though.
Applause. Yeah. Award-winning score. Plays in the back. Step up to the podium. Heavy.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, Academy. I thought this was the Hurt Lockers. I'm so surprised by this. I want to thank the Academy for recognizing this film. You know, we had a lot of challenges bringing this to the screen, but I'm really glad with the result, and I'm really glad that you all have loved it as much as you have. I want to thank my producing partners who aren't being named here. I'd also love to thank our esteemed and talented cast, Miss Zoe Saldana, Mr. Channing Tatum, for really headlining an amazing film, and I'm so proud of their work in this. And I gotta thank God, because if it wasn't for his vision, this amazing story, Shady, wouldn't have never been told. So thank you so much. See you on the screen real soon, guys. Shady 2 coming this summer.
You're ridiculous.
Yeah, well...